Jesus, Abandoned and Condemned. I'm Lance Leffler, and this is what we're getting into on today's episode of God Meets the Grind. This chapter opens with Jesus being bound by the religious leaders and taken to the Roman governor's barracks. The disciples are gone. It's eerie. We won't see them again in the book of Mark. Instead, Jesus is surrounded by malevolent and indifferent strangers. Mark's narrative is sparse and stark. I see the film of this in my mind, grainy, the colors drained and the shadows long and foreboding. Not quite black and white, but not quite color either. Overly honest and unflattering, pulsating with nothing. Jesus, the Lord of life, is about to be crushed under the immense weight of the redoubtable justice of the Roman Empire, at the instigation of religious people, who Jesus once called a pit of vipers. Pilate was the Roman governor over Israel. The Jewish leadership has decided that Jesus is deserving of death, and that's where Rome comes in, because only they had the authority to execute. But Pilate's indifferent. The Romans didn't care about internal Jewish squabbles. As long as there was peace in Israel, that's all that mattered. The Jewish leadership knew this, so they tweak their accusation of Jesus. They tell Pilate that he claims to be a king. That would get his attention. There was no king but Caesar. So Pilate interrogates Jesus, asks him straight up if he's the king of the Jews. Jesus answers vaguely with, "You have said so." A saying that could mean several different things, but wasn't the obvious yes or no that Pilate was looking for. It was his responsibility to give the prisoner a chance to defend himself against his accusers, but Jesus essentially refuses. Pilate's baffled by this, but he still doesn't want to condemn him, so he goes to the crowd. Roman trials were usually public, so there was always a crowd there, and he asks if they want him to release Jesus. They had this bizarre tradition of releasing one prisoner of choice during Passover. But the priests stir up the crowd against Jesus and in favor of a murderer named Barabbas. You know, it's weird to me that they did executions in Jerusalem during Israel's most holy feast, and even weirder that they had this practice of releasing a condemned prisoner. So Pilate orders Jesus to be crucified. And so the Roman soldiers dress him in a purple robe, which symbolized royalty, and they begin to spit on him and beat him and bow down and fake homage to him. And they press a crown of thorns down onto his head. After a severe beating, they give Jesus his own robe back and lead him out into the streets. On the way, they conscript this stranger named Simon of Cyrene to carry Jesus' crossbar. Prisoners would normally carry their own crossbar to the site of crucifixion, where an upright post was fixed in the ground, and then the prisoner would be stripped, nailed to the crossbar, and hoisted up, and the bar would be fastened to the post. It's not clear why they had Simon carry it. Maybe Jesus was already so weary from the beating. And what Mark doesn't document is that Jesus went through a horrific lashing with a leather whip with multiple strands that would have contained pieces of bone or lead or bronze in them with hooks. They would tie the prisoner to a low post. He would be hunched over and lashed, tearing his back to shreds. It was the third hour, so around 9 a.m. Crucifixions were very public and highly attended, and the crowd that gathered mocked and derided Jesus, saying, among other things, the ironic words, "He saved others, but he cannot save himself." Crucifixion was one of the most ghastly forms of punishment. Jesus' hands and feet would have been nailed with spikes and his legs bent. It was actually a death by asphyxiation because he wouldn't be able to breathe when he slumped, so he would have to push himself up to breathe, pressing all his weight on the spike through his feet and straining the muscles in his legs, which were bent just enough to make it impossible to hold that position for long. And this normally went on for hours, sometimes days, until the condemned person finally succumbed and suffocated to death. At noon, an eerie darkness creeps over the land and smothers Jerusalem for 3 hours. And then, at around 3 p.m., Jesus cries out, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Some of the people who heard it, or misheard it, as these things go, thought he was crying out for the prophet Elijah to come and rescue him. And then Jesus uttered one last loud cry and took his final breath. Picture the scene. Jesus is surrounded by strangers and enemies. His disciples are MIA. But from a distance, some of the women who had been part of Jesus' group of followers, Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James the Young and Joseph, and Salome, witnessed the whole thing. We'll come back to them in a minute. And then Mark inserts this strange and intriguing comment. He says, "The curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom." And then another surprising element, the Roman centurion standing guard at the foot of Jesus' cross, when he watches Jesus die, says, "Truly this man was the Son of God." What an incredible insight. What did he see that convinced him? As evening approached, another stranger, this time one of the Jewish Sanhedrin, the religious council of Jerusalem, came to Pilate and asked if he could take Jesus' body down and bury it. This was a man named Joseph of Arimathea, and Mark interestingly says he was one who was looking for the kingdom of God. Pilate grants him Jesus' corpse, so he takes him down from the cross, wraps him in a burial cloth, and buries him in his own tomb. And he rolls the massive stone across the front of the opening. And Mark tells us that the women followed Joseph and watched where he was buried. And the scene ends. The Messiah is dead and buried. Bible readers have wondered at the only words of Jesus from the cross that Mark records, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Jesus is actually quoting the opening words of Psalm 22, a psalm written 1,000 years prior. If you read the psalm, in light of Jesus' sufferings, you can see that it was actually a prophetic psalm, giving clues to Messiah's eventual death. There are statements in the psalm where he says, "They stare and gloat, they divide my garments among them, and for my clothing they cast lots." Mark's gospel doesn't record it, but that's what they did with Jesus' clothes. But why does Jesus quote it? When you read the psalm, you'll notice how the psalm starts out with despair and finishes with praise for God's deliverance. Maybe Jesus was pointing back to Psalm 22 to show the victory that was coming. But how could Jesus say that God forsook him? Well, because he did. Jesus was abandoned by the Father in that moment. What does that mean? I'm not sure exactly. But in that moment, somehow, God turned his face from his Son. Or probably better, he turned his wrathful face to his Son. You remember how Jesus prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane the night before his crucifixion, agonizing over what was coming? This was it. The Old Testament book of Isaiah, in chapter 53, verse 5, prophesied that Jesus would be crushed for our iniquities, and upon him would be the chastisement that brought us peace. So Jesus took the Father's wrath against our sin. The Apostle Paul gives us a bit more insight on what happened on the cross in the book of Romans, chapter 8, verse 3, where he says that God condemned sin in the flesh of Jesus. So Jesus took the punishment that we deserved. We could spend eternity trying to unravel exactly what that looked like, but somehow the Son of God suffered this torturous affliction of the Father's condemnation in our place. This is a really unpopular notion in our culture today. People will admit, "Hey, I'm not perfect, sure, but deserving of the wrath and condemnation of God? Please." And I have to say, this boggles my mind. When I was first confronted with the gospel in my late teens, I had questions. I wanted to know why people thought the Bible came from God and all that, but I had no reservations about my own sinfulness. I was the generation right before the participation trophy generation, so that probably helped. If you find the Bible hard to swallow on this account, I guess I would recommend just keep reading and pray that God will reveal himself to you and reveal your true nature to you also. You know, the ancient Greek maxim says, "Know yourself." No, I'm not talking about the Drake song. This is harder than it might sound. We think we know ourselves. I would argue, and Jesus definitely would, that we don't naturally know ourselves like we should. As dark as Mark chapter 15 looks, we come to find out that the crucifixion didn't catch Jesus by surprise. You'll remember that back in Mark 10:45, he said he came to give his life as a ransom for many. To zoom out a bit, we see that none of this caught God off guard. Here's what the Apostle Peter preached in the book of Acts, chapter 2, verses 22 and 23, about the crucifixion. Listen to this. "Men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man attested to you by God with mighty works and wonders and signs that God did through him in your midst. As you yourselves know, this Jesus, delivered up according to the definite plan and foreknowledge of God, you crucified and killed by the hands of lawless men." It was the plan of God all along. It was the way things had to be. All was not lost on the cross, just the opposite. All was gained. Only sinners will get it. As one of my favorite hymns, "Come Thou Fount of Every Blessing," says, "Jesus sought me when a stranger, wandering from the fold of God. He, to rescue me from danger, bought me with his precious blood." Thanks for listening. If you like today's episode, please share it with somebody. Also, if you're on Facebook, would you go on and follow our God Meets the Grind Facebook page? For more encouragement, go to godmeetsthegrind.com.